imagine this, right? You are a kid who doesn't go out in parties, no relationships, no nothing. All you do is sit in front of a computer, play video games, and write code. What is the most interesting part about your life? Like, I'm not going to be sitting in a bar talking to people about, hey, I built this algorithm. Be like, yes, can you please not do that? But if I tell them, like, hey, you know what? I refused a huge acquisition for a great story to tell. Then people have like, okay, please tell us more about what you do.
You mentioned that you dropped out of college. There's quite a few famous people who have dropped out of college. But you dropped out twice.
Yeah, it was very weird when I tell people, I'm like, oh yeah, I dropped out of college. And they're like, oh yeah, cool. And I'm like, listen, the cooler part is I dropped out of college twice.
Hello everyone, my name is Neil Patel and I thank you for listening to the latest episode of the Indian Startup Show. That was my guest Harshdeep Singh. He's the founder of WrapItUp and he was my first ever guest to appear on the show back in August 2015. How time flies. So I'm delighted to have him back on the show. We talk about how his app now has 3.5 million downloads, why he actually turned down $20 million acquisition for the app. Talks about mental health issues and why he almost quit tech and how he turned things around in style. And he gives his new, fresh perspective on life. He gives us great insights on mobile app design and development and marketing strategies. Talks about going from the idea to MVP and why he doesn't want a co-founder. He talks about becoming a pastry chef as well, and he gives us thoughts on Clubhouse being the next big thing. And finally, we take a trip down memory lane and talk about the embarrassing first ever episode of the Indian Startup Show. So please enjoy the show, and thanks for supporting the podcast. I really appreciate every single one of you. Hello, Harshdeep. Thank you for coming back on the show. Been a while. Been going on? If you can give us an update on WrapItUp and how it's going.
WrapItUp's been doing really well. Yeah. In fact, we scaled to 3.5 million users. Wow. On the iOS and Chrome extension. Mm-hmm. WrapItUp's kind of pushing towards what I like to call the WrapItUp Everywhere project, which means I want WrapItUp to be available as a chatbot, WrapItUp on the web, which is in pre-alpha right now, but it's still available. So if you head over to WrapItUpApp.com, you can kind of use the web version now. It's going to break a lot, but that's there. So WrapItUp, at the end of the day, is now pushing towards the whole idea of being everywhere available, so you can consume a lot more information in less time.
3.5 million downloads. How does that make you feel?
Oh well, it's a number that I never thought I would end up achieving, given that even till date I'm the only one actually working on it. And more than the iOS app, the WrapItUp Chrome extension is more popular because, okay. So how the Chrome extension works is, once you download and install it, it starts highlighting content, right? So if you head over to a blog, it just starts automatically highlighting, or a research paper or whatever it is, it would start highlighting the most important content that it understands. So that's really great. But then I'm kind of phasing out Chrome extensions now in support of the web version and the other chatbots that are coming in. It's a very major move, given that I would like to say 90% of my entire user base is as a Chrome extension. So the current users aren't affected, but I am now pushing them towards using the web app and other things, because after, I think, 6 years now of running WrapItUp, now finally I'm moving towards monetizing it with the launch of WrapItUp Plus somewhere in March. I'm hoping by March end, WrapItUp Plus should be hitting the iOS stores along with WrapItUp 5, which also includes the fifth version of the summarization algorithm, which I like to call LAST, which stands for Linguistically Advanced Summarization Technique. Yeah. So as of right now, WrapItUp only highlights the most important text, but with LAST 5, it's going to start rewriting content. Mm-hmm. And as usual, all of this is going to be happening on device. Mm-hmm. So you still don't need any internet connection to summarize. Mm-hmm. Which I feel is still one of the most defining factors for WrapItUp's success, mm-hmm. because one of the major reasons I feel like WrapItUp ever took off was, apart from being offline, is how small it is. Right. And you know, with offline first idea, and given that it's under 5 MBs, it really works out for a lot of people. Mm. So, yeah.
So, yeah, you started it 6 years ago. Tell us how you got started. I think you were at school, weren't you?
This all started in 11th grade, where because I was playing a lot of basketball tournaments and I was still very antisocial at the point, and I had a lot of social anxiety. So I ended up thinking about, hey, what if I just magically create an algorithm that would help me summarize? So 11th and 12th grade, which is the 2 years of high school, I spent a lot of time writing algorithms on paper because I was in boarding school, so it was next to impossible to have good access to computers. And post school is when I actually started writing the algorithms. And then I think it took me like another 2 years before, another almost 2 years before the first iOS version was out. That kind of did good because I still remember having like 55 downloads on the first day. And I was like, okay, that's really great. And now looking at those numbers, it's like, oh, well, it's just 55 downloads. You know, it's a bad day now.
You must be the most successful. You must be the most successful app developer in India then. iPhone app developer in India then.
Maybe in the solo category.
Yeah,
but then if you think about it, majority of my users are still on the Chrome extension. Yeah. So the whole iOS thing is still kind of way far away, even if it's on solo terms.
I don't care. I'm giving you the award. you're officially I'm calling it now. You're officially the most successful app developer in India.
Oh my God.
In the population of a billion, you're the most successful app.
I really wish I could like accept the title, but okay, for clickbait, I'll just accept it.
You can put that on your website now.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you talked about the early days of the algorithm. I think you were talking about like basically flowcharts, right? How did you evolve from flowcharts to the programming side of things?
It took me like 2 years to kind of figure out and to understand what this actually is, because I didn't want to fall back to any existing NLP algorithms. Nah. So NLP or natural language processing is the branch that deals with summarization and tokenization and all these things in computer science, right? So I was like, I do not want to touch any of the existing models because then my thinking would be biased and limited. Which is also, again, one of the ideologies of how I ended up dropping out of college. My algorithms kind of started out in a way where I would pick up newspapers every day.
Right.
And I would pick out each and every single news that I wanted to read. And I'd be like, if I'm highlighting certain sentences, what is my thought process of highlighting those sentences? Mm. And once I started building, these flowcharts of, okay, so this sentence has more information than the others, or this sentence has the combined information of the last three sentences and, you know, stuff like that. So how it ended up being was I was trying to replicate what I think is the most important and then try to really figure out why do I think it's important. Now, once I have certain flowcharts available to me, I would pick out random news. I would read the entire thing. Then I would use the flowchart to highlight sentences based on the criteria that the flowchart says. Mm. And then I would again compare, be like, okay, would I be willing to highlight these sentences if I was doing this without the flowchart? So this was a lot of trial and error. And at the time, I didn't understand it, but this was essentially first principle in play where you kind of break down into the smallest or the most basic elements and then rebuild back up. I feel that's the entire reason why the algorithm today is so quick and works offline without a lot of processing power on mobile devices is because it replicates my way of thinking in terms of a flowchart. So till last four of what's available right now, last five's very complicated in that sense. But in last four, just highlighting the most important sentences is not about building machine learning models, but it's more about just using plain old maths and intersecting sentences with others and then figuring out, okay, this is a more informative and important sentence.
You must have read a lot of newspapers then.
That was the peak of me actually reading newspapers.
What was the breakthrough moment then?
So, I was kind of stuck in a problem of trying to figure out this together. And the 1 year I was at Flame in Pune, Flame University, what ended up happening was I'm in an anthropology class and our professor was explaining how the evolution of the butt was really important for the apes standing up and eventually becoming humans. Or at least that's how I remember it. And that was when I was like, all right, I need to build my butt for Wrap It Up, which was the base connector for how the algorithm works to the slider. So I like to contribute, I like to pin out most of the success for Wrap It Up is to the fact that you get to decide how much you want to read. I feel like a lot of summarization algorithms and summary applications don't really do this well, or they don't do this at all, is they kind of read research papers that, hey, you need to at least push out 30% of the text for it to make sense. But at the end of the day, when you give the user that option, be like, hey, how much of it do you really want to read kind of stuff, you know? So that ends up giving out much better summary outputs is because you are expecting it to be a certain way and you are in control of how you want the end result to be.
Yeah.
Instead of an algorithm deciding for you, oh, you should be reading this much. Yeah. Like, no, what if I want to read more or less? Mm. And I feel like that's the whole but how WrapItUp goes from just another summarization app to WrapItUp as it is today.
Yeah, you talked about revenue. I suppose you could have.
So I did have an offer. I think that was for roughly 20 millis USD.
Wow.
And so this is how it happened, right? I think that was the point where a different application came by and it was immediately in the charts because it was a summarization app and it was a paid app. Mm. And I immediately pushed out an update to kind of piggyback on that SEO rankings because everyone's searching for summary now. Mm. And eventually I'd end up getting that 20 milli offer and it was a very weird one, right? I just randomly get a call. I still don't know how they got my number.
$20 million you were offered for this app.
Yes. So it was very weird, right? Because they were like, hey, so we kind of want to hire you and not, you know, WrapItUp itself. Like they would end up killing the app. That was their base thing. And they wanted to build a new service, which if I remember correctly, was like $30-$35 a month. And I was like, okay, that is a lot of money. Because with WrapItUp, the idea was to make reading easier and not have huge paywalls. But then building a paywall would, destroy the whole concept of running and building WrapItUp in the first place. Another reason was I wasn't ready to work under someone else because I was still a kid. Like I think I was 20, 21 years old. And I was like, you know what? I don't want to work under anyone else. Unless it's my parents, it's not happening. Mm. One of the major reasons was I just wanted a great story to tell. Because,
right, okay.
Yeah.
Like, here you are on the Indian Startup this. Show.
Yeah, yeah. So imagine this, right? You are a kid who doesn't go out in parties, no relationships, no nothing. All you do is sit in front of a computer, play video games, and write code. What is the most interesting part about your life? Like, I'm not going to be sitting in a bar talking to people about, hey, I built this algorithm. We're like, yes, can you please not do that? But if I tell them, like, hey, you know what? I refused a huge acquisition for a great story to tell. Then people have like, okay, please tell us more about what you do. So even though like I kind of like to highlight this more often, and it's life-changing money, let's be very real here. Okay. But the whole concept was, because I'm in my 20s, early 20s at that point, I can afford to take risks like these, mm-hmm. right? Because when I'm 30 or 35, I cannot be doing risks, do all these ballsy mm-hmm. stuff. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, I feel like one of the things that I've finally learned and what I'm putting into practice is taking as much risk and building as many products that I possibly can. Mm-hmm. Whether it is then, you know, building a product and shutting it down 6 months later, like I did with Medicine Brewery, which I'm planning to open source soon, but no ETA on that either, because I have a lot on my plate right now. But yeah, I feel like in 20s, you can take a lot of these risks without a lot of repercussions. And in your 20s, you should be actually doing every single thing you possibly can instead of wasting your time, you know, binging Netflix and stuff. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So yeah.
What was the reaction of your friends and family when you told them that you turned down 20 million?
They called me stupid. And I mean, it's like, it's understandable. You know, someone walks up to you and be like, oh, hey, you know, Neil, I refused the $20 million offer because I wanted to have a great story to tell. My roommate slapped me and he's like, are you all right? Like, call them up, take the money, sell it off, go party for the rest of your life. And I was like, or I could have a great story to tell. Mm-hmm. You know, that happened. My roommates were really mad at me. And they kind of took me out. They're like, listen, we're still trying to explain to you. Take the money while you still have the chance. And I was like, sorry, it's not happening. Mm-hmm. My parents, on the other hand, they were like, okay, we need to see the sheet where this was actually offered. Because, mm-hmm. you know, obviously, why would you refuse this loan?
Yeah, yeah.
So I showed them. And then my parents asked me, are you sure about it? I was like, listen, I'm happy, right? They didn't ask me a lot of questions, which I feel like was a great thing because at the end of the day, my parents also understand that if I'm doing something, at the end of the day, the result of it should be that I want to be happy and content with my life. Mm-hmm. And all my parents told me like is the fact that if you're happy with it, we are happy with it. You know, we have enough money. We don't have to worry about it. Mm-hmm. Touch wood. And you know, if you don't want to do it and if you want to have a great story to tell, that's completely on you. We are not going to force you to do something. So I feel like that kind of support was one of the reasons why even today I can take such risks, is because I don't have to worry about explaining to my parents about why am I doing like 10 different things at the same time.
You mentioned that you dropped out of college. I think there's quite a few famous people who have dropped out of college. But you dropped out twice.
Yeah, it was very weird when I tell people, I'm like, oh yeah, I dropped out of college. And they're like, oh yeah, cool. And I'm like, listen, the cooler part is I dropped out of college twice. So what ends up happening is I was at Flame in Pune. And I feel like looking back, one of the only regrets I have is dropping out of Flame. If I was in some other place, it would have been fine. But Flame is possibly one of the best places that I've ever been to. Right? Not in terms of their education level, but in terms of the kind of people I met. Mm. So what ends up happening is in my second trimester after the college fest, where the entire college is divided into four teams, we were out and we had a terrible accident that put me in the hospital for 2 months. My grades went down drastically. I was a 8.5 GPA student and it went down to like really low numbers. And while the management was like, hey, listen, you didn't have any alcohol and it was an honest mistake, so we'll let you pass through this. So we won't count your second trimester, but if your CGPA is above 6.5, I believe, for the first and third trimester, you're still good to go. You can cover up later. And because we had good standings, all of us who were in the accident. So we were given that option. And I feel like that's a lot of support from a university, right? What ended up happening was the third trimester, I was really unmotivated or like demotivated, sorry, to do anything, because the amount of effort I had put into building all of my study material and courses and stuff, it just felt like it wasn't enough anymore. And with Wrap It Up kind of making a lot of sense, I was like, what if I drop out and enter in a separate college where there's not a lot of attendance requirements? And I just kind of pass through time, because coming back home in the small town of Sambalpur in Odisha would have meant that I cannot build connections anymore, right? True. So living in Pune and Bombay is where I could build a lot of my connections. So I was like, okay, now I need to buy time from my parents. So I ended up dropping out of Flame. And I ended up joining another college. So here's what happens with the second college, right? I attend the first day and I was like, okay, listen, from Flame, this is a huge downgrade. And I need to go through the entire terms of service and policies and all these things they have and figure out a loophole. Now, what ends up happening is I figured out of the six semesters, the first five semesters are completely dependent on passing one single subject. So as long as I have enough attendance and grades in one subject, I can pass to the next semester. I can buy time for my parents to stay in Pune. And I don't have to attend college, like quote unquote, waste time at college, right? Because I'm already working a lot on Wrap It Up at this point and other products that I'll eventually be pushing out. I figure out this one subject that is once a week. So this means like minimal effort. I could easily touch 80% attendance in that. And the course was usually easy in terms of organizational structuring and stuff like that. So I didn't have to spend more than a day studying for the exams. I went up to my professor, and this is right before my TED talk, right? So I was kind of playing it very carefully. So I walked up to my professor. I'm like, ma'am, can I see you, for like half an hour after college is over? So she was like, sure. We meet and in college itself, and I explain her. I'm like, ma'am, this is my entire situation. And I give her a demo of Wrap It Up. And she's like, okay, but where are you going with this? So I was like, listen, I have a TED talk coming in less than 7 days. I just want you to support me on a personal level where you kind of ease up on the kind of, homework and other research thing that you give to me. And I'll make up for it, with an extended deadline, because I'm working on these products. So I end up negotiating a deal with her that as long as I have 80% attendance and as long as I'm passing in my written exams, because, you have a lot of written proof in that, she's like, I'll give you decent enough grades in your class participation and stuff as long as you're not disturbing or sleeping in the class. Yeah. So I was like, you know what? That sounds like a great deal. I'm going to take that because that's the best you're going to get, right? So I take that deal, and luckily for all the five semesters, it's the same professor doing that once a week class. Right. And she kind of eased up a lot of tension that I would have had if that deal didn't go through. Mm-hmm. So in exchange, all I had to do was get her two passes to the TED event, which was great because they gave me like four passes and I could only make use of two. So yeah, I mean, like that really worked out well. And so once the fifth semester hits and I was like, okay, I cannot go to the sixth semester because I have like 30 backlogs at this point. I call up my dad. I'm like, listen, dad, I'm not happy. I want to drop out of college. And now this time dad's like, are you sure about it? Because you just have one semester left. And I'm like, dad, I'm not happy. And he's like, okay, when do you want me to get the tickets done? I was like, give me 2 weeks. I kind of want to wrap things up I'll come back home. So that's the story of how I ended up dropping out of college twice.
That's a great story. Unbelievable story, that. Going back to the app design side of things, in terms of the mobile app development, how's that changed over the last 6 years? When it means you sort of like designing a mobile app, it's like, you know, keep it simple, as it were. But obviously, you've got thinking of adding all these features. How do you balance those two things out?
One of the base ideas has always been following the Apple ideology is to build something so good and so well designed that you don't need a tutorial to learn how to use it. So if you think about the iPhone, right, you don't have any buttons except one in front of you. Like, sorry, back in the, days.
iPhone 5 these days,
Yeah, so the moment you pick up the device, you instantly know that if you want to exit, there's only one button and you press that and you're out, right? No one has to teach you that. So with Wrap It Up, the idea has always been to follow that ideology and build a product where everything's right in front of you. And at the same time, it should make sense without a tutorial. So I didn't have a tutorial until the recent version, Wrap It Up 4, where because now you can summarize from the text that you write and a URL. So I was like, okay, now I kind of need to explain the person like, okay, you need, you know, this is how you kind of do both the things from the same screen. And I still have a lot of issues explaining that even with a tutorial. So Wrap It Up 5 is gonna have a major design change and a major design overhaul in that terms, where things are just right in front of you, where you don't need a tutorial to use the app. So at the end of the day, even in its current state, and now that I have the new designs ready, Wrap It Up 4 in its current state looks extremely terrible in terms of design, to me at least, because now I know what 5's bringing in. So it's like, you know, it is what it is kind of stuff, because I eventually figured out that 4 is a little difficult to use. So I was like, okay, I need to figure out what we are doing with 5. And luckily 5 is like much more easier to use. I've had a lot of feedback with like those 1 and 2 star app reviews. And I kind of still reply to them personally every single day. Because, I mean, see, that's the only way you're finding out what's wrong with your app, and you kind of only want to make things better because you're supporting a huge user base at this point. So yeah, that's what the design outlook has been so far.
Nice. In terms of marketing then, marketing the app, I think you mentioned SEO. What's worked and what hasn't worked?
Right. So here's the thing, right? I personally have a lot of problem with clickbait because with clickbait, it's more like even though you get the clicks, but then the end product isn't what you expect it to be. So that's kind of a letdown. So what I usually do is I figure out. So in the early days, right, when I was in Pune and Bombay, I would do printouts of the app and like explain like, you know, too much homework, summarize it all for free, Wrap It Up's logo, available on the App Store. And I've gone to each and every single university and college that I could go to, or I would pay like 100, 200 INR to people and be like, listen, just put it on your boards, right? And I would have them put it out. And that's pretty much how we gained the initial traction. Now, what ended up happening was, because Wrap It Up is 100% free, right? And we are also privacy first. I don't like to collect the data more than, you know, if the app crashes, only then do I want to understand why the app crashed. But apart from that, I do not really care about the data, right? You summarize what you want to, that's your stuff. I don't want to barge in and figure out what you're doing with the app. Because there's nothing you can do apart from summarizing, right? So the whole idea has always been to grow organically, and by staying 100% free with no ads, you instantly start recommending it to other people because the app is actually that great. So by not having clickbaits, by word of mouth mostly, you end up in a place where people recommend your app because it's that good, right? It does only one thing, but it does it really well. And it's free. And it works without the internet. What more could you ask for? So if I were to look back at trends and, you know, chart it out in a graph, usually in the exam season, a lot of students would download it. And I feel like that is solely how we end up with, you know, like 60, 70 odd thousand downloads at that time on the iOS version. It was purely because, you know, just like me, people were too lazy to read and they wanted to summarize things and really get there, because you just want to pass your exams at any cost, right? And stuff like this seems very lucrative because, you know, it's free and it summarizes text. Like, what more do you want?
In terms of the development stack, obviously you talked about the algorithm. What were the other challenges and things that...
So I feel like one of the things that I learned over the years is to prototype first. Mm-hmm. And my prototyping usually starts with, so this is my ideology, from an idea to an MVP
Like a framework, basically.
Yeah, a framework, yeah. So the first thing is, I have the idea journal where I would just start scribbling down any and every single idea that I have.
Yeah.
It could be as simple as, body pillows as a service, where you could hire a body pillow, like an actual body pillow because of seasonal depression, to building Wrap-It-Up and Wrap-It-Up 5, for that matter, or medicine brewery, or whatever you want to call it. So the first thing is you build up an idea journal and you kind of start writing out each and every single ideas you have, even if you think it's extremely outlandish or if it's never going to work, right? And then eventually you go back to it a week later, because now your head is much more clearer and now you're going to, like, you know, it's one of those drunk stories where when you're drunk, everything seems so great. But the next morning when you sober up, you look back, you're like, oh no, this was a terrible thing to do. So usually when you look back at things, now you know what could work and what could not work. So at the end of the month, I usually take up all of these ideas and I pin it down on a list. And then I debate with myself of what could possibly work and what could not work. And I put it down in a priority of what's possible to build in the next 6 months, right? So the number one would be something that I could deploy as soon as possible. And the last would be something that would take me years to build. And then I would simply erase everything else except for number one, right? So now it's like at the end of the month, I have one new idea that I have shortlisted that I really want to work on.
True.
And if it doesn't work out, you always have the idea number two and idea number three, if you, assuming that you don't generate any ideas after that, the following month. Mm. So that has kind of been the first, you know, like, okay, what am I going to work on? So now that you have that available, you kind of do some research in the demographics and what kind of audience that you can actually cater to. And then you start working on the design. Because at the end of the day, if you're building a SaaS product or a micro SaaS product, or if you are building an online store, or if you're building something like Wrap-It-Up, your design sense needs to be really amazing. Mm. Because if your design, conveys what the end product does and everything's kind of right there and it's very minimalistic and it's clean, you've already won 90% of the battle, right? The rest 10% is actually putting it in code. Mm. So I usually take a lot of post-it notes and printouts and I scribble my entire design. Like, I could be using a design tool like Sketch or Figma, but even today, using pen and paper really works well for me, right? So I have this wall, which is like a completely clean wall, and idea of the month would have its entire wireframe taped onto it, right? And once I have that, and then I kind of sit down and be like, okay, do I really want to work on this? I kind of sleep on it for a day. Because what happens is you're in the excitement of this new idea and you have these frameworks and you think that it's actually going to work. You kind of want to sit back and, you know, absorb the whole thing of whether it's going to work or not. And then the next morning, if I still feel like, okay, this could actually possibly work out with a decent enough revenue generation, I start writing code for it. Or I would hire freelancers and be like, okay, here is the wireframe and this is the technology stack I want you to use, and start building.
That's good though.
So once we hit a prototype stage,
then
I get in touch with people who could potentially be using it for their day-to-day needs, right? So one of the micro SaaS platforms that I am building is for urban farmers, people who grow microgreens on trays or hydroponically.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, indoor farming in general. Mm-hmm. And that's also how I got into hydroponic farming. Mm-hmm. I feel like we'll talk about this a little later.
Yeah.
But what ends up happening is because I built this MicroStars product now, and I am growing microgreens, and I know a few friends who are doing that. I was like, hey, you know, this is a prototype. Things will break.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of want you to give me some feedback on it, and I want you to rely on this platform apart from what you're already using. Mm. And now that I have great feedback, I'm like, listen, thank you for using it. I'm going to give you the base premium version for free for like the next 2 years because of the amount of feedback that you have given me. And now I have a well-tested, ideated product which has a prototype and have a functioning service, so to speak. And then comes like, okay, now you go to Reddit forums, you start talking to people, you start messaging them or Instagram or Twitter, and you reach out to people and you pitch your products and be like, okay, hey, you know, so this is what I'm kind of wanting to do, and this is a prototype, and I'm willing to give it out to you for a 50% discount for the first entire year. That's what my go-to strat has been, because I've already calculated server costs, and I'm like, okay, I can actually afford to do this and have some money left over for a buffer. And while the prototype is out and I'm already being paid on the prototype product, that is when I start hiring freelancers and building things, and then I go all out on that. So with the micro SaaS for microgreens and urban farmers is something which is in the prototype stage, where I'm offering a lot of urban farmers at a 50% discount. We're like, you know what, take it for a 50% discount. This is a permanent discount for up to 5 members in your team. If you grow more, it's going to be like the regular rates. And without even having an official launch or product hunt and stuff like that, I already have a working prototype that I'm being paid for already. So, you know, this is my entire process of how I generate ideas, build prototypes, and actually start looking into if it's a viable thing that I could actually possibly grow later, you know, after spending a lot of development and design time onto it.
No, that's good. That awesome deep dive into your framework there. But in terms of development, then is it still worth doing an iPhone app in 2021? Then it seems there's millions of iPhone apps out there now. So is it still? Do you think it's still worth doing an iPhone app or an Android app, perhaps?
My usually go-to strat about thinking if I want to build a mobile application or not is first think of what service you're building, right? So with my micro SaaS in microgreens, if you run a team, right, you want to build a to-do list and you want to ping your team members like, okay, this is your to-do list. Now, they can't be in front of a computer the entire time. So making an iOS or an Android application makes sense here. And here's the thing, right? If you're copying just another business model, or you know, if I'm making just another notes application, of course there is no point in getting into that because it's just another note application. There's enough, like that market is so saturated already. So at the end of the day, building iOS and Android applications is extremely profitable. I would like to rely more on iOS for my revenue than Android because the market stats are out there. iOS users tend to pay more compared to Android, though the number of downloads are obviously more on Android because of how many devices there are available. But yeah, it really depends on what you're trying to build and whether or not it makes sense for you to, you know, either make a progressive web app, which works really great on mobile, versus spending the time and energy and development time more into building an iOS or a mobile iOS or Android application.
I can't believe you're still doing this on your own. I mean, do you think you'll have a, like a co-founder?
here's the problem with me, right? I am very scared that if I rely on a co-founder, I would be accountable to them more than I am accountable to me.
Right.
And there would be ideology crashes. Like, why would someone build, wrap it up and run it for free for 6 years and then start thinking about going into the premium version? Like, it doesn't make sense to spend 6 years of your life into building a completely free product only because you want to scale organically and not want to throw money into marketing. I've also turned down a lot of VCs and angel investors because I don't need that money. Even today, if let's just talk about the iOS app for WrapItUp, right? It cost me only $99 to run the app. And that $99 every year is the Apple App Store fees that I cannot avoid. Yeah. There are no servers for WrapItUp because all of this is happening on device. So I'm at a point where I'm so cost conscious and I'm so idea conscious about what the end experience should be like. I don't want a co-founder to delegate tasks to. I want I want to do it myself, even if it takes more time, because that means that I have more control over my product and my vision actually makes sense, because I'm constantly talking to my end user about, you know, where I want to take the app and how I want to monetize it and how I want to engineer the app. More emphasis is on that always. So at the end of the day, having a co-founder to me is usually a lot of idea clashes, because even today, so I've also joined my family business of hotels.
Okay.
And there are a lot of times where when we're renovating the place, right, Dad and I would spend an entire hour on deciding which shade of gray should be going into a space, right?
Who wins that argument?
It's sometimes we just end up flipping a coin. Be like, okay, Dad, heads, you win, tails, you win, I win. We flip a coin. Okay, it's heads. Let's go with that. So that's the thing. So it's more like, unless I can't convince Dad or he can't convince me, we're like, okay, you know what? Let's settle with a coin toss. And that's how we have taken a lot of decisions. And luckily it has worked out so far, because at the end of the day, he's my father. He's been in the hotel industry for longer than me. I only bring in some sort of design sense and a lot of tech upgrades and efficiencies to the hotel industry for us. But the piece operation is still him. That's something that I'm still learning. And there's no fast track to it, because this requires a lot of time, because, you know, I hate running physical businesses, because you need to build the product over and over again. In tech, you just build the product once and you sell it 100 times. So it still takes a while. And luckily, now that I'm a pastry chef too, I can actually contribute in the kitchen and build new dishes and modify existing ones to be more cost effective while still either retaining the taste or switching to a better taste profile.
How's that going for you? How's that working out for you, being a pastry chef? Must be different from sitting in front of a laptop all day.
Oh yeah, so with the whole pastry chef thing, what happened was, so I was working in a company, a medicine tech company, and things went so wrong from that point that I was in a terrible mental state for over a year. And I remember texting you. I was like, okay, hey Neil, I'm leaving tech. I messaged you on Twitter and I was talking about the whole pastry chef thing. So when I texted you, I was already a pastry chef. I'd already finished my course from Bangalore. So I was at a point where I started thinking, because of my terrible mental state, was, who am I outside of tech? Because I've been doing tech since fourth grade, whether it was writing HTML or C++ and stuff like that. So I was like, okay, who am I outside of tech? And I was like, you know, baking is something that I really am interested in, but I never got the chance to bake. Because it's such a fine art. And I was like, you know what, let's take a break. Let's do this great course from Bangalore, from Lavon Academy of Baking Sciences. And I spent 6 weeks there, got my certification, and I was like, okay, so I'm a pastry chef now. I came back to the hotel, and immediately from the second day, I started working in the kitchen. And after a good while, what ended up happening was I started missing tech. Right. And the very same day, I get this email from a lady. Now, okay, none of this is backed by science, but I'm just glad I could make a difference to this lady. So this lady emailed me, stating that how WrapItUp as an app has impacted her life. Right. So both her kids have attention deficit disorder, and it's extremely terrible. And she was like, so I need to explain them concepts. She herself never got any college education, right? So she was like, okay, it's very difficult for me to kind of explain concepts, and I'm doing a full-time job. So she was using WrapItUp to help herself and help her kids study more. And according to her, they started getting like 10-15% extra grades compared to their pre-WrapItUp times. So as much as I would love for it to be backed by science, that summarization apps actually help people with ADD kind of, you know, perform better. But that was a very wholesome and heart-touching moment, because think about this, Neil. Like, as a 19-year-old kid who is in his pajamas with a cup of coffee in his bedroom, writing a bunch of code and pushing it out, and someone on the other end of the world, their entire life is impacted because of like those 5,000 lines of code that you wrote, right? And now it starts becoming extremely real that every single line of code that you write is eventually having an impact on someone. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that was a very defining moment. And I was like, okay, you know what? Let's get back into it. So I remember that night, I was like, listen, Dad, I'm not going to come to the hotel for the next 1 week. All of a sudden, I was back in the zone. I got a bunch of energy drinks and water. And I was like, you know what? Let's start building. And that was the point where I started rewriting the entire RapidUp algorithms. Mm. And I was like, you know what? I'm happy with this. Let's push it out. So that's like a tiny, I would like to say a tiny, like 1.5 years pretty much of how I pretty much almost left tech and how that one day with a 5-star review and an email, I kind of was like, you know what? I'm actually like making a difference. Let's get back here.
Yeah, yeah. Got your juice back then.
Yeah.
You talked about the mental side of things. Was that frightening?
It was. Yeah. It was. Okay, I'm going to issue a trigger warning for the next 2 minutes in case people who are listening to this are not comfortable listening to this. Because I'm going to be talking about mental state and I don't want to get too deep into it. But just a trigger warning, issuing a trigger warning beforehand. It got bad. It got bad to a point where I didn't want to wake up in the morning. I was so burnt out from working at a medtech company and constantly being under the pressure of someone else. Like, remember when I told that I didn't sell RapidUp because I didn't want to work under anyone else apart from my parents? Yeah. This was exactly why, because I was afraid that this would eventually end up happening. While I was doing really great at work, my mental health was deteriorating at an extremely quick rate. And here's what happened, right? This is what was the defining moment where I was like, you know what? I need to leave this company and I need to get a therapist. Was almost every single one of my friends looks up to me when they are in trouble, right? One of the most common messages are, hey, you are Hirshdeep, you'll figure it out whenever I'm in a problem. When I told them, listen, I can't do this anymore, right? I don't want to wake up tomorrow morning. Like all of these people kind of got so scared. They're like, listen, leave everything what you're doing. Go back home. If you need our help, we'll kind of support you through this. And I kind of got a therapist. We started talking. Things started getting better. But I feel like the most defining moment was... So my therapy is still going on and stuff. This random one day I wake up and I still remember this very clearly, right? Because this was the defining moment. I get up from my bed and I instantly fall down because I was like, I cannot get up. And it was at that point where I was like, okay, now I've lost control over my body. This is the reason why I don't consume alcohol, is because I hate giving up control on my body or my thoughts, right? I was like, okay, you know what? I need to pull myself out of this somehow.
Yeah.
And I started crying. And it was such a filmy moment for me because being so tall... by the way, I've grown an inch since our last interview. So I'm six feet nine now.
6'9". Good stuff.
Right. Now this was such a filmy moment because there was a mirror right next to my bed. And I kind of looked myself in the mirror. And it was at that moment, the person in the mirror was talking back to me. They're like... You're the same dude who gave a TED talk and who did this and who did this and this and that and this and that. Why are you like this? Like, pull yourself together. It's going to be fine. I feel like more than therapy, that 30 seconds of me looking myself in the mirror, half crying, not being able to control my body was the defining moment where it was like, okay, I need to pull myself back together. So I kind of took that day off. My parents were also super concerned, obviously, because I am usually the one who's always laughing. And me crying or me being sad is a very rare sight in the first place. Because I'm usually like, okay, let's sit down and figure out how can we solve this issue and how deep I am into the problem, right? So, of course, everyone was worried. But from that moment onwards, I remember mom telling me that day, she's like, listen, I'm really happy that I've seen you smile after like almost a year now. So that was such a defining moment for me that I was like, okay, now I need to, you know, control back of what's going around and figure out why things went wrong. So I started going to the therapist more and I started talking more about things and it took me another 6 months, but then eventually I was back on track and luckily things worked out. And since that day, I'm kind of very conscious about my mental health and ensuring that I don't burn out and I'm not... you know, and I'm in short taking care of myself, not just in terms of my physical health, but my mental health too. So Yeah, I mean, that was also the point where I was starting to question, like, who am I outside of tech? Mm-hmm. And that's where I went and did that baking course. But I feel like after doing so many things, the whole idea of being a polymath finally came to fruition, because now I can use concepts from other industries in tech and, yeah, you know, vice versa. So I feel like while it was an extremely terrible moment or a terrible stretch of time, mm-hmm. it eventually helped me become more mature emotionally, personally and professionally.
Let's talk about what you're sort of working on right now then. I believe you've started some sort of e-commerce agency.
Based
on the Shopify platform.
Right. So we are Shopify partners. Hero Media is an e-commerce agency. Mm-hmm. We work with people. So we specialize in two things, right? Mm-hmm. One, you're just starting out. And the good thing from the pandemic that came out was a lot of people now want to move online. Yeah. And we just started right, before the whole pandemic thing hit. And by God's grace, we've been doing really good. So we focus on two things. One, you just have a product and you come up to us, be like, hey, listen, I have a product. I want you to help me out with not just building a store, mm-hmm. but how do I ship it? How do I manage returns? What should my production process be like? How do I manage orders? So essentially, going from I have a product to I want to turn this product into an entire business, online and offline, but with more focus on online, obviously. Or the second thing that we specialize in is store migration. So you already have an online platform available and you're on other platforms and now you want to switch over to Shopify. And so we kind of help you through that. So those are our two main ideas and fields of interest. And one of the things that I usually take a lot of pride in is we don't do regular marketing. Mm-hmm. So a lot of agencies would be like, oh, you should be doing email marketing and Facebook and mm-hmm. Twitter and Google. While this works, you know, this is, of course, like the backbone today. This is the billboards of 2021. Mm-hmm. We still like to go one step ahead and start promoting these products in a way where it's not really conventional. So one of the I would like to say this is still a little conventional, is hiding Instagram meme accounts and making them make fun of the product, because that's really great for brand awareness. We also tell our clients to start making GIFs or GIFs and kind of push it out on Jiffy Cat and all these other platforms so that people end up using the GIFs. And that's another way of great, organic way of promoting your brand, because if you are a water company and you make this really funny GIF with with your, say, water can in it, people are going to know because it's a funny GIF. Mm-hmm. But the end result is someone is like, okay, wait, what is this company now? And you start searching for it, and that's how you end up finding a new brand from an end user's perspective, just because someone posted a funny GIF that was completely unrelated to the brand, so to speak, or a person who didn't know of the brand in the first place. Nice. And we also kind of hire OnlyFans influencers, which is something that a lot of clients are very iffy on, because it's kind of getting into adult entertainment, so to speak. But we have seen the highest amount of engagement and highest conversion in sales from that platform. So almost every single brand that we work with today, I'm just like, listen, will you allow me to place your brand there? Because if that's happening, I can really help you out a lot. If not, we're going to have to like figure out some new spaces.
How big is Shopify in India then?
Shopify is doing really great in India. Yeah. In fact, with the whole pandemic thing going in, Shopify has been the go-to platform for a lot of people. Right. So the two most requested platforms before people get to know that we are a Shopify-only agency is, apart from WooCommerce, because WooCommerce is a lot of work. You need to self-manage the entire platform. Mm. So number one is Shopify, and the second is BigCommerce.
Okay.
And we are working towards getting the BigCommerce partnership too, because if we don't take up that line of work, it's lost revenue for us. So I'm kind of training half of my staff to now learn BigCommerce and the other half on Shopify.
What are you like as a boss?
We have been remote first. I haven't personally met half of my team. Now here's the thing, right? So we're working with this tea company, and this is how this whole idea came to being, right?
Yeah.
Usually what happens in a company is you see who's free and available for that slot.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, hey, so this is the team and you're going to have to work on this. What ended up happening was I just randomly posted some working, I'm talking to this client and we could potentially sign them up. And they want to sell tea online. They have like 30 different brands of tea.
Mm.
And what happened was 4 people built their own team. And it was a perfectly balanced team of designers and developers,
yeah.
And marketing managers. And they were like, you know what? We as a collective would like to work on this if you sign this person.
Right.
And what ended up happening was, I was like, okay, you know what? Let me quickly build an internal job board. So now what happens is every month, these people, they have this whole idea that you need to do at least 2 projects a month. And you get to decide who you work with and what you want to work on. So it's more like how external job boards work, except on the internal job board, I would just post in, okay, so tea company, this is what the profile is like. This is the kind of stuff that I'm looking for. Build your own teams.
Mm.
And people would build their own teams and then connect up, be like, okay, we would like to apply to work on this project.
Mm.
So one of the most, like, I would like to say one of the biggest change that has happened is people actually take a lot of interest in working now because this is something that they're passionate about or this is something they know a lot about. So allowing people to work on projects that they want to work on has been a great productivity and efficiency booster.
Mm-hmm.
Because till date, I'm like, listen, this is the deadline. This is the kind of work you need to do. And I'm not going to force you to work on, say, 9 to 5 or 3 to 6 or whatever time it is. On the day of the deadline, let's set up a meeting at this point. And that's when I need updates.
Mm.
So giving them full control of the project and how they want to work on it and when they want to work on it has been really great, at least for Hero Media right now.
Awesome. So that's going well. Awesome. Last few questions then. You mentioned your hydroponic farming space. Mm-hmm. What are you actually growing in? You know, have you tasted it yet?
Oh yeah. So it really started out when I was searching for wheatgrass juice, and I saw a lot of these YouTube videos where they were growing wheatgrass in their own farms, and I was like, okay, I have some space, and I kind of want to do it indoors because on the outdoors I didn't have any space. So that's when I started looking into microgreen farming, which is essentially growing these plants, which are like roughly 3 to 4 inches in size.
Mm.
And you grow them in trays indoors using a special light, which is like spectrum balanced.
Right.
So to mimic sun. Now what happens is I ended up being so like getting so much into it because after the whole seeding and harvesting process, it doesn't take more than 30 minutes every single day. And it's a great relaxation thing, right? You go into this room where you have racks of plants growing in. More than anything, you know where the food is coming from. You control how the food is being grown. And you know that this is something that you put in a lot of time and effort into. So this ended up becoming a really great hobby where I would grow these microgreens for our consumption.
Mm.
And a lot of this product would also go into the hotel because we would use fenugreek and mustard leaves and stuff.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know what? Let's see what else can we grow.
Mm.
Because stuff like broccoli and Chinese cabbages and all these other things, it's not easy to find in a smaller city.
Mm.
And even if you do, they're full of pesticides and it's very expensive,
mm.
right? So I was like, what if I buy the seeds and I set up a tiny farm on the indoors and I grow my microgreens and my plants indoors?
Mm.
So what now ended up happening is I have 20 trays of microgreens and I think 100 plants growing in a room. So I took up a space in the hotel, which was anyways we were using as a storeroom.
Yeah.
I was like, let's clean this up.
Yeah.
And let's turn this into a tiny indoor farm. So now, of course, that also helped out in, I was like, okay, wait, why am I doing everything in an Excel sheet when I can build a micro SaaS out of this and monetize it? Because now I know what goes into building this and how I could actually be managing it using tech. And, you know, it's like great because now I get to build a new line of products and I get to build an indoor farm. So I'm kind of looking into building a bigger farm so I could actually go commercial with it. But as of right now, we grow broccoli, Chinese lettuce, and there was another one. I'm also getting some blueberries to grow in my touch bucket series. Yeah. Saplings. And we grow a bunch of microgreens, which is, I think right now I'm growing sunflower mustard, fenugreek, and red amaranth.
So is this like an automated process then? You just plant it and leave it?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, pretty much.
What about water?
It doesn't take up... Oh yeah, so the 15-20 minutes of work that goes into it is usually checking up the health of the plant.
Right.
So you're usually looking at the roots. You're usually looking if there's any possible mold growth or any other infection, so to speak. And you're kind of adding a nutrition mix and watering your plants. Mm-hmm. So apart from the whole seeding and harvesting part, which is a little time consuming, honestly, it's 15-20 minutes of work every single day. Mm-hmm. So you're just checking for nutrition levels in your hydroponic system. You're checking for pH levels and stuff like that. So it doesn't, I would like to say, because I like to use that as a break, I spend roughly an hour every single day in those systems, because you know it's a good break from working with clients and stuff the whole day. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's a great break time for me too.
What does weed grass juice taste like?
Oh, it's very different from the weed grass that you get from the market.
Mm-hmm. So sell it
it's,
to
it's
me.
It's a little okay.
Sell it to me. Sell it to me.
Listen, it's great for health.
Is
all right.
It? Okay.
Microgreens, if I'm remembering correctly, it has like 40 times more nutrition than a full grown plant. I think it's 40. It could be a different number. I can't remember it correctly. But it's roughly like 40 times more from what I can remember. And you know, it's like I don't really care about the taste as long as it's healthy. So you know, it's good. It's good for health, and that's how I'm going to sell it to you.
Awesome stuff. All right, nearly in now. So last time I asked you about advice for entrepreneurs and startups, you think you said be prepared for failure. Any updated thoughts after 6 years?
So I've failed in building a lot of products. So LapiTop is something that took off. Admin to Dev also. Quick note on Admin to Dev.
It's that.
So I also ended up doing a Salesforce certification, and then I was like, okay, you know what? I can learn programming on the platform too, because my cousin, who's based out of Hungary, is a Salesforce consultant, and he doesn't know how to code. So I was like, you know what? I'll help you out with some smaller projects. Admin to Dev was MySpace, or is MySpace, sorry. It's 100% free for Salesforce administrators to learn programming on the Salesforce platform.
Right.
So Admin to Dev, I started this in the first week of May 2020. And so far, we have already had 180,000 unique users on the platform. And it's going at a really great pace, because now this is completely personal opinion. A lot of people hate me for putting out a personal opinions. I've been attacked and canceled a lot. But Twitter cancels you for every small thing. But there's a lot of garbage content outside of the official documentation for learning Salesforce programming. Because the amount of quality, the quality is extremely terrible. So my idea for Admin to Dev was to build something that is based on user feedback. So I built a Discord community. We have 150 Salesforce professionals, all from people who have just got the certifications to people who have been in the industry for more than 10 years. And they are constantly pumping in feedback. They're like, oh, hey, you made a spelling mistake here, or hey, this is not really easy to understand, can you rewrite it? So after writing the entire courseware, I ended up rewriting like I think like 10 chapters out of some 30 chapters in the first month itself.
Right.
Now what ended up happening was, because it's free, and I built a very controlled community where, so we had a lot of people who were just trying to talk random stuff, and I'm like, listen, this is purely for Salesforce. All of your political and religious views are outside of the community. I think I have like, what, 200 bans and 150 members in the Discord community, because I'm like, listen, Salesforce and Salesforce only. Yeah. I don't want any other discussions happening here. So that kind of has fostered a community where people can talk about Salesforce as much as they want to, right?
Because Salesforce is CRM, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's a CRM.
So what programming languages are they learning then?
So Salesforce has its own programming language, which is loosely based on Java, called Apex.
Carry on. Yeah.
And so I'm also moving into the other things called Lightning. So there's a lot of programming in Salesforce itself. So you need to know JavaScript and stuff. So there's a lot of work that's happening in the background. And I'm also writing a book for Admin to Dev, which is one of the only paid products in terms of Admin to Dev, which is The Administrator's Guide to Becoming a Developer, which kind of talks about how do you deal with, you know, switching from a non-technical role to a really technical role, like dealing with the imposter syndrome, setting up your LinkedIn and stuff like that. So that's also happening. So the really great thing about admin to dev is because of the amount of feedback that I was getting, a lot of people were like, listen, English is not my first language. Right. And I was like, you know what we're going to do? I'm actually going to sit down and I'm going to translate the entire courseware into French, German, and Spanish. Wow. And I made that promise without thinking about how am I going to do it. Yeah. And the next morning when it actually hit me that, okay, this is what I wrote because, you know, I was in the heat of the moment. I was like, okay, now I actually need to do this. So I was like, you know what? I'm taking a month off because I'm, you know, doing a lot of stuff. And people were like, you know what? It's okay. It's still a lot of content. And I was still helping people out with their problems and explaining them. So like, there's not going to be any new content. And a month later, I'm like, oh, hey, by the way, remember that talk about Spanish, French, and German translations? It's available with admin to dev now. And people were really taken aback because it was like, okay, you're building a free courseware site and you're translating it into three different languages. So that riled up a lot of content creators and I got a lot of hate email like, you are breaking our, you know, business models. Yeah. And I'm like, listen, if your business model can be broken down by a kid with a laptop and an internet connection, you need to think of a better business model, right? People see me as, these are not my words. These are words from other people. They see me as a micro influencer in the Salesforce community because of how much effort I'm putting into building great content. So, you know, one of the things and the reason why I talked about this so much is because the one thing that I've understood apart from being prepared to fail, is you need to understand that when you are so young, when you're like 20, 21, 22, or even younger, you cannot just go out and change the world, right? It doesn't happen overnight. You want to build something that changes at least one person's world, because till date the German site is only being used by two people, right?
Right, okay.
But those two people are so thankful. They're like, listen, now I can finally move from the admin role to a developer role. And one of them landed a job in the middle of a pandemic. And they posted on LinkedIn, they're like, listen, all of this could happen was purely because of admin to dev. Right? So I feel like a lot of people my age are so focused on trying to change the world or say that they're not contributing enough to the world. Like, no, your entire focus has to be first building something that's beneficial to you. And instead of trying to change the entire world, you want to change the world for just one person. And sometimes it's completely all right if that one person, it's you, right? Wrap it up. Started the same way. I was too lazy to read. So I was like, cool, I'm going to change my own world. Admin to dev, I was like, I wish I had something like this, right? And maybe my cousin could use this and do it. I was always trying to change one person's world because we are all unique, but we are not that far away from the problems that we have. So if you can change one person's world, between like 7.5 million people, you're going to find a big enough crowd who have the exact same problem and are looking for that one solution that you're looking into, you know? That's the whole thing about being an entrepreneur, right? You want to select a niche and you want to build products on that because you're just trying to solve a problem at the end of the day. So apart from being willing to fail and there's this whole thing of trying to change one person's world, never let anyone outwork you. I feel like one of the reasons why WrapItUp and even the e-commerce agency could do as good as it does today is because I was actually willing to put in the time and effort.
Yeah.
Because on a shorter run, when other people were like, oh, listen, I made a summary app, one of my other competitors who was making fun of me. And he's like, listen, I've made like $10,000 from the last 5 years. And you have been in a market for more than you haven't made a single buck. Think about this. 6 years that I was willing to put in that time and effort for this and scale to 3.5 million users. You think if I push out a premium version for 99 cents, and if I can convert 100,000 people, right? And rounding off numbers, that's $100,000 in revenue. And even if I span it over like 5 or 6 years, that's still $15,000 to $20,000 a year, you know? So things sometimes won't make sense on the smaller run because when your competitors are trying to run that 200 meter race, you are always, you need to remind yourself you're running that marathon where all of the hard work and patience that you're putting in right now is eventually going to come to fruition because you understand that you're building not a product, but an entire platform. And when it starts paying you off, it's going to pay you off a lot.
Yeah.
Because people, you know, luck can only take people so far. Eventually, you're going to have to start putting in a lot of hard work to build the things that you want to build.
Good stuff. Let's leave it on that note then. For people who want more information on what you're building, how do they get in touch?
Yeah, so I'm really active on Twitter and Clubhouse.
Yeah.
My username is King, K-I-N-N-G-H. And yeah, like my DMs are always open. I actually talk to a lot of people over on Twitter and Clubhouse. So yeah, like that's by far one of the best places to reach because I'll mostly reply in 5 minutes.
How are you finding it on Clubhouse?
Oh, Clubhouse is great. Yeah. I think you should really be on.
It's more like a sort of a live podcasting. Is that right?
It's okay. One of the reasons why I really love Clubhouse is because there are no filters. You cannot think before you do it. Because on Facebook and Twitter, you can think what you write.
That's
now on Instagram, you can think. You can like work on your pictures, Photoshop it, add filters. On Clubhouse, you cannot do that. Because if you invite someone up to ask you questions, you're going to have to be really good at what you do to be able to answer that. If not, you're going to make, you know, people are going to very quickly find out that you are not who you claim to be. Because here's the fun thing, right? Because it's so raw, all the connections you make on Clubhouse are really amazing.
Okay.
So that's one of the reasons. That's, in fact, the only reason why I love hanging out in Clubhouse is because it's so raw and unfiltered.
What do you think about the sort of the invite only model?
It's great. Mm. It's one of the only reasons why Clubhouse is where it's at, because I feel like it's a great marketing tactic, being iPhone and invite only, number one. Number two, they get to test out their product because being, of course, number one on iPhone only, where you cannot really mess around with the apps. I feel like on Android, you can still break down a lot of apps if you're rooted and stuff.
Yeah.
And second, being invite only kind of slows down your growth, but it also makes you so exclusive that people want to be on the platform, you know, because you don't know what's happening on the other side. You really want to know what's happening. So I feel like their whole invite only thing is really great from a product perspective because it generates free marketing and it gives time to the team at Clubhouse to kind of work out the product and clean issues before they scale to the next 100 million users.
Do you think it'll get to 100 million users?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Clubhouse is the next big social network. Because I was looking at my screen time, I have switched over from being on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook to being pretty much exclusively on Clubhouse. In fact, my Twitter conversations are either me talking about Clubhouse or me talking about people at Clubhouse about what rooms do we want to build and what topics do we want to schedule our events on. So at this point, all of our work and all of my personal life meeting people on the internet revolves around Clubhouse.
Right. Okay. I'll have to check it out sometime. That's it. Ashdeep, thanks for coming to the show, mate. It's been a long time.
It's always great.
Thanks for being my first ever guest.
Neil, before we end off, I kind of want to talk about, I don't know if you remember this, but I kind of want to talk about how I got on the first episode.
Yeah, please do.
Do you remember this?
I think you sent me a random email, right?
Or was it a DM? So I was listening to your podcast when you were in your previous company. And I was like, hey, listen, I love your podcast, even though, okay, I'm going to admit this now. I only heard one podcast and I was like, I love this guy. And I was halfway through and I was like, I'm just finding out your email and I'm sending it to you. Like, oh, hey, I've been listening to your podcast. Really love this. And I was like, I really want to be on the show, right? Just so that I can talk to you.
Yeah.
And we record the entire podcast. And then you email it to me, be like, hey, listen, the company's kind of shutting it down, but I'm starting my own. And I would love for you to get on that. So I was like, you know what? That's great. And, and then we rescheduled and we shot, we recorded the entire thing again. And that's how I ended up being on the first episode for the Indian Startup Show.
God, I actually listened to that podcast for the first time this morning. And the thing is, like I said, that podcast is the second most popular podcast, you know, the number of, you know, I've done 166 episodes. And that's the, that is the second most popular podcast. What do you actually remember about that, doing that podcast then?
We did it twice. So the second time I was very scared.
Right. Second time, okay.
Because, I mean, the second time when we actually shot for the Indian Startup Show, I was really scared because I didn't know what I was talking about. I was, what, 19?
Yeah.
And I was like, listen, this is my first ever interview. I've never done interviews before or podcasts or whatever it is.
It was my first time as well.
So, like, I actually still cringe because I was explaining to you what the weather in Pune was like. That, and I was like, yeah, just this morning, I was like, listen, do not explain the weather the way you did with Pune. And like, I'm not talking about the weather right now.
I know, it was like the Indian startup show. My first question was, where are you from? And what was the weather like in Pune?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's why I've not listened to it until the first time tonight. Right then, Ashdeep, let's keep in touch.
Oh, for sure.
I have to taste some of that pastry when I'm next time in India.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
What was it? Is it sugar free?
So I was kind of in the mood to get into that space, but then because of the pandemic and stuff, I was like, let's pull back a little and focus more on tech because you know that's where the money is. Mm. So yeah, like those chef things right now is mom is like, hey, someone's coming over, can you bake some cinnamon rolls? And I'm like, yes, mom, I will do that.
Oh, you're not putting on weight, are you? Eating all these pastries.
Here's the thing, right? Just like a drug dealer, you never get high on your own product. So my all of the products that I make are usually like I'll take a bite just because I want to taste it. Mm. And then I'll be like, yeah, listen, I eat this a lot. You know, y'all have it. I don't want diabetes. I'm only 25. I need to hit the gym every day for that now. So that's what's been happening.
Awesome stuff. Right then, Ashdeep, I wish you all the best, mate. Good luck.
Right, you too.
Cheers, mate. Cheers, bye-bye. Thanks to Ashdeep for coming on the show today. Go and connect with him on Twitter and Clubhouse. Check out the link in the show notes. And if you haven't yet, please subscribe to the Indian Startup Show wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you for supporting the podcast. And let's connect on Twitter at Indian Startup SH, or you can go to facebook.com/Indian Startup Show, or you can send me an email, hello@neilpatel.co. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye.